Like dude with the big voice just said, this is the Garrett Ritt Show starring me, Jim Rome.
Game on.
Ritt, man. Welcome to the show. It's brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We will get back to the show, I think, I hope, momentarily. Got Will Brinson coming up next segment. Your telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Some of his reaction is tremendous. At Big D for Defense tweets, Ritt, I am so glad Rome did the reset. The way you stepped all over that lady's call had me crying. Niagara Falls, Diane. It's good to have you, Diane. How are you?
War hey, lady clones.
Damn, Ritt. I thought that Alvin had some really good insight. I hope you didn't. I hope that it wasn't lost in the conversation he and I had. Like one of the things Alvin said that normally if I say damn Ritt or damn somebody, first of all, I don't talk to the guys like damn. I mean, you can ask any of them, Alvin included. Have I ever damned any of you ever, either on or off the air or during the show? No, I mean, I'll ask a pointed question like, what are you doing, man? Or what do you think? But I would never, damn, Alvin. Seriously, Alvin, if you've been here 15 years, have I ever once damn Alvin to you?
Damn,
ever. No. So the fact that I did do it to Ritt and did it on the air is something.
Damn, Ritt.
Sean tweets, this might be the greatest non-smack-off hour in the history of the show. That's high praise. Justin Saltzman, or Satzman, excuse me, tweets, seriously, Jim, I may not have laughed this hard in the jungle since Romageddon. Jim, we love the balls on Ritt. Signed, coaches who say, I don't care if they fire me. Greg in H-Town. Jeff in SoCal is in. I just spit out my coffee when Ritt dropped burning. Give that man a raise. Drew in West L.A., quote, Fabian thinks that Alvin is having difficulty expressing himself.
Yeah.
All right, then. We've had our fun. I know Ritt has. 1-800-636-8686. New topic. So Andrew Bogut announced that he's retiring this week. Of course, there's no way I let that legend walk away without paying my respects. We are talking about an All-American, a National Player of the Year at Utah, the first pick overall in the draft, an NBA champion, and one hell of an interview. He is also part of that select group of guests that have come on this show and made a simple request.
Supposed to shout out a guy that was talking about Larry Brown's crank, right? I got no crank stories for you, Jimmy. But I've heard everything about Toby Boy, so I'm supposed to shout him out. But I'm still thinking about whether I will or not.
Absolutely incredible,
Andrew.
Now that was absolutely incredible. I mean, that's not a guy who was just giving a name because he was told to give a name, or people on Twitter got after him to give that name. He knew the history, and he wanted in on it. Quote, I've got no crank stories for you, Jimmy, is an amazing moment. Calling Toby Boy, is even better. And then him saying, I haven't decided yet whether or not I'm going to get into this. Then he slipped in again in 2013. And when I asked him about a tweet that he posted after the Rockets had beaten the Warriors 140-109, we started to have this conversation. The Rockets had thrashed Golden State in that game. Bogut had an interesting tweet for the Rockets. So I had to ask him about that tweet and the fact that he seemed pretty bent with them. He said that that was not the case.
It would seem to me that you were pretty mad at the Rockets.
Oh, no, I was just talking about seeing Toby on next Wednesday.
Oh, look out. Here's my man.
Line that one up beautifully, Jimmy. But no, I mean, it was one of those games. You know, I like to have subliminal messages, so if people want to read it that way, they can. It could also mean that I want to catch up with some friends for a movie that day, too. So we'll just leave that one as it may.
That's two for him. One Toby it's reference was amazing. Me. Two is it's legendary. And there's no way that you could ask for any more than that, right? Except the great ones, The truly great ones know how to give the fans exactly what they want, and they do it in a way that you never see coming. Andrew Bogut rejoined the Warriors last year, and he rejoined the Jungle last year, and he did not miss a beat.
You going to come out to the game in Houston?
If I can get on that Andrew Bogut jet, I might come out. You know,
we'll
beer or two after?
With Toby.
Toby? Can you get Toby to come?
Well, that's your guy. Give him a buzz. Give him a call and just sit courtside and have a few beers, kick a few back and enjoy the game.
That's your guy. Why don't you call him and kick it courtside and have a few beers with Toby in Houston? There it is, the hat trick. Each one more clever than the last. He wasn't just saying a name. He was getting comfortable with it. He came into each interview with a plan, and he worked the plan. And that plan started with him talking about Toby and his crank. A freaking legend in and out of the Jungle. Andrew Bogut. Now, if that were the only icon walking away from basketball this week, it would be a massive, massive loss. But he's not alone. Another legend with a long history with this program is also on the verge of hanging them up. The Clippers are waiving Joakim Noah. And his agent, Bill Duffy, told ESPN that it most likely will be the end of his career. And what a career it was. Two-time NCAA champion, two-time All-Star, Defensive Player of the Year, and one of the truly great personalities in the history of the association. This is a guy who back in 2010, with the Bulls, waged a one-man war against Cleveland. Not against the Cavaliers, but against Cleveland, the entire city. And he was relentless. There was his comment about life away from the court in Cleveland during the playoffs.
I don't know about this place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
Man, that comment is so amazing. It is so amazing, and yet it frequently gets forgotten because of what came next. Most guys would say something like that and then apologize, and then they would say that it was taken out of context, then they try to make up for it. Not Noah. Not even after the factory blast. Yeah, man, I just stay in my hotel room, man. It's bad. It's bad. It's just factories. No, he was not going to apologize for that. He went all writ with it. When he was asked about it after game two of the Cavs series, and keep in mind, Chicago was down 2-0. He didn't go with the "I'm just here to talk about the game" card. Oh, hell no. He was not backing down. He was doubling down.
You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, "I'm going to Cleveland on vacation." What's so good about Cleveland?
I mean, he had time to think about it. They were down 2-0, and then when the reporters couldn't wait to get up in his grill about it, he's like, "What? What? You think Cleveland's cool? I never heard of anybody going to vacation in Cleveland." And then, when he was asked about all the boos that he received in Cleveland, he didn't give two bleeps about that either.
Do you regret anything that you said about Cleveland?
Not at all. You like it? You think Cleveland's cool? I mean, I never heard anybody say, "I'm going to Cleveland on vacation." I mean, what's so good about Cleveland?
Have you ever been booed as much in your life?
Yeah.
When did you boo more than this?
I was booed a lot. My whole life I've been booed. College, I was getting booed a lot. Boston, they don't like me over there. And they don't like me over here either. It's okay. I have my friends. I don't care.
What a great line. It's okay. I have my friends. I don't care. This dude's amazing. And in a weird way, it was appropriate that years later in 2016, he was in Cleveland. The night the Cavaliers received their NBA championship rings, he was asked if there was any irony in that. Quote, "I don't think it's ironic. Congratulations to Cleveland. Even though it's not a vacation spot, you guys got your championship." End quote. Listen, if this was the only reason you knew this guy, for his hatred of Cleveland, that would be something. But if that were the only thing you knew him for, you'd be missing out. There is so much more to Joe Noah. For instance, he didn't care much for Kevin Garnett, and he said as much on a radio program.
Just very mean guy.
Really?
Like, I mean, geez, where is the There's no love there.
Where's the love? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, none at all.
Just nasty.
Yeah. Ugly, too.
Yeah.
He's mean and he's ugly. And the situation with KG bugged him because he used to like KG.
But he was trying to tell me, you know, what sucks is that when I was growing up, I used to have his poster in my room. I used to wear his jersey. And the truth is, you know, my rookie year, you know, I was, you know, in admiration of this guy. And you know, he kind of shut me down. And, you know, he was very mean to me my rookie year. And he's only mean to the young guys and the Euros for some reason. You know, I don't know why, but that's who he doesn't like.
See what I mean about Joakim Noah? He was only mean to the young guys in the Euros. And he's ugly. He's talking about Kevin Garnett. So this guy was not just a great character, though, and an amazing character, Joe Noah. He was a great player, a three-time all-defensive team selection. Two of those times, he was first team. He finished fourth in the MVP voting in a season where he averaged less than 13 points per game. Do you know how damn good you have to be on both ends and how much you have to impact the game to finish fourth in the MVP voting while averaging less than 13 per game? I mean, there really is no way to sum up Noah and his impact on the game, much less the world at large. But I'm going to leave the final word to J.B. Bickerstaff. J.B. Bickerstaff coached Noah in Memphis and had this to say about his own player.
Joakim is crazy.
Joakim is effing crazy.
Joakim is crazy.
That's his own coach. Joakim is effing crazy.
Joakim is crazy.
That's his own coach saying that. Agree to disagree, coach. Joakim is effing awesome.
Joakim is crazy.
My only issue with him is I couldn't get him to come on the show, and we tried hard for a long time. For a long time. It's all right. Not everybody says yes. I've always said it. I'm not doing my job unless somebody says no. Either way, respect, Joe. There will never be another like him. There will never be another like Bogut. Like, literally, I don't think there'll ever... Guys like that don't come around anymore. They're gone. And when they're gone, they're gone. I miss both of these legends already.
I got no crank stories for you.
You have to understand, too, about Andrew Bogut. When he rolled out and said, I've got no crank stories for you, Jimmy.
I got no crank stories for you, Jimmy, but...
He and I were not, it's not like he and I are like Elk and I, right? It's not like he would come on the show a ton. He just got that comfortable and went right into it. And not only was he comfortable enough to mention Toby, he knew the background on Toby. And not only did he know the background on Toby, he referenced crank stories about Toby.
I got no crank stories for you, Jimmy, but...
Remember I said the other day... There are only two people in the world who call me, quote, Jimmy. My wife and my mom, Bogut, too. That makes three. That's three for me.
I got no crank stories for you, Jimmy, but...
Happy trails, big dude. Happy trails, big dude. And you too, Joe. And never forget, Joakim, because I do sometimes, Joakim Noah's dad was Yannick Noah. Amazing tennis player and a super, super colorful dude. Great personality. Forget that sometimes. He was a great player. If I'm not mistaken, he was ranked as high as like number four in the world. So you got a world-class basketball player, world-class tennis player, and a world-class trash talker. Except when he was talking about Cleveland, he just deadpanned it. It was a matter of fact. It wasn't even trash. He just like stated a fact and a question. You like it? Why do you like it? Yeah, no, I don't
like
my room. Yeah, man, it's
cool.
Bad here, dude. Factories.
It's all factories.
It's all factories. Hey, Cleveland, don't be upset with me because you know I have your back. You know I love you. But that's an amazing line. It's all factories.
This place, man. I just stayed in my hotel room, man. Every time I look out my window, it's pretty depressing out here, man. It's bad.
So you're not going out?
No. No going out in Cleveland, man. It's all factories.
I look out my window, and man, it's depressing. It's bad. Why? What makes it so bad? It's factories, man.
It's all factory.
Right. You know, like they manufacture products that help the economy and the nation, and they put food on their table. You mean factories?
It's all factories.
Right. How do you think those things get made, Joe? Those widgets, those products, those things that we need to live in factories.
You like it?
So good. When we come back, we begin the interview portion of the program. Will Brinson joins me next. Xavien Howard is a cornerback for the Dolphins. He will be in hour number three. James Kelly's got a big fat head and lots of information rattling around in it. Big head bets in the third hour. Alvy's week that was in the third hour. And more. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Not only have I found my guest, but he stepped away momentarily from an in-progress tennis match to fulfill his jungle obligations. He is a CBS Sports senior writer, friend of the program, host of the Pick 6 podcast. You want to check out the Pick 6 podcast YouTube channel. He hates ketchup. He is Will Brinson. What's going on, Will? How are you?
Jim, what's going on, man? I wish I was out there in California. I think the tennis weather would have been a little bit nicer than the 55-degree chill box, windy chill box we had here in North Carolina. But anytime you get out of courts, it's a good day.
So, dude, are you playing on the concrete? Are you playing on clay? Are you playing on grass? What surface?
We got some clay courts. I think it's like 8 clay and 2 soft out at the old University Club here in Raleigh. So me and a couple buddies went out there. It's been a Friday morning. Go out, play some Canadian doubles, and try to get a little sweat in.
No, Will, seriously, are you playing on clay?
Yeah, we're playing on clay.
Hell yes. Red clay?
No, I can't. I mean, I'd like playing out of the French stuff, but you'd think that there would be more red clay courts here because there's so much red clay in North Carolina, but you never see them around here. It's usually just like the soft. Dark clay.
I love it. I have never played on clay. That's awesome.
Really?
All right. Yeah, no, that's great. Good
for you.
Are y'all
all grass? Are y'all all grass and hard courts up here?
Hard courts. I've never played on grass. I've never played on clay. To be fair, I haven't been on the hard court in about 20 years, but no, that's awesome. I've never played on clay. If I don't redirect you, we're going to talk exclusively tennis, and I got to talk football with you. But it is the first week of December, Will, so let me ask you this. We got to get serious because we are into December. The Steelers are undefeated, but are they better than Kansas City?
No. Hard, firm no, and it's no disrespect to Pittsburgh. But, I was on the CBS Sports HQ with our mutual pal, Pete Prisco, yesterday, and we were dissecting Pete's power rankings. He had Pittsburgh number one and Kansas City number two. And Danny Cannell and I asked him, it's like, well, you know, that's fine, Pete, but if they played, who would you pick to win the game? He's like, Kansas City. I said, well, what are we doing here, man? If you think Kansas City's better, they should be number one in the power rankings.
Right.
And look, Pittsburgh's a great team. Ben Roethlisberger's playing at a much higher level, bouncing back from that elbow surgery than I think people expected. They are loaded at the wide receiver position. James Conner, the running game hadn't really gotten going yet, but losing Bud Dupree is a huge loss. But T.J. Watt and that defense, Minkah Fitzpatrick on the back end, they can create some turnovers and some havoc, and they're the best pass-rushing team in football, at least until Dupree went down. But I don't think as good as they might be, I mean, I'm setting the line at Kansas City -5 or Kansas City -6 if those two teams play. That's just how well Patrick Mahomes is playing right now. He's the MVP at the moment, and there's no chance I would fade him in any head-to-head matchup in the NFL.
Speaking of Kansas City -5 or -6, would you take Kansas City -14 against Denver the way they are this week?
No, but I wouldn't want to take Denver either. If I'm picking, I'm taking the dog, because dogs over 2 points this year are winning, I think it's 57% of the time or something crazy. I mean, they're hitting an incredible clip. It's because, with the lack of home field advantage and travel and COVID situations, you're better off just having the points this year. And I don't want to get in front of Patrick Mahomes. I mean, 14 points is a ton, but the Broncos aren't going to be rolling out my boy Kendrick Hinton again this week. They got their quarterbacks back, and Drew Locke and that crew feel like a backdoor special where they're down 10 or, you know, they're down 17, down, you know, down 20, and they go out and get a last second meaningless touchdown. And Andy Reid's not the guy to put his foot on somebody's throat, especially in a division matchup. And sometimes you see, Jim, are these spreads with the second, I think it's like second divisional game in 3 or 4 weeks. Teams are like 19-4 over the last 5 or 6 years. So you're better off taking the divisional dog in that spot.
We are talking to Will Brinson. Will, I'm not trying to turn this into a gambling segment, but you talk about a backdoor special. You want to talk about a backdoor special. Ever see anything like Seattle -6.5? Now, again, you didn't have to get them at 6.5, but a lot of people did get them at 6.5 recently. Have you ever seen anything like that in your life?
No, I mean, it's been a while. I think the last one was that other Monday night game with the Washington football team in Kansas City where there's a fluke return touchdown on the last second garbage stuff to cover. But that was bad, man. I had when the Jalen Hurts stuff started popping up, I told some of my buddies to bet the under on Carson Wentz passing touchdowns at 1.5. So that one stung pretty bad. The crazy part is, and I think Doug Kazarian of ESPN pointed this out as it was happening correctly, is that when the Eagles were going down the field, down 14, you had, you know, most teams, I think like 90% of football teams are going to kick the extra point to go down 7, try to get the onside kick and you know, make it a 7-point game. Eagles and Doug Peterson notoriously follow the analytics and go for 2 down 14 in the fourth quarter if they score a touchdown, meaning you are going to have your heart ripped out or you're going to be saved depending on that 2-point conversion. And sure enough, Carson Wentz and those guys, I mean, that's as tough a beat as it comes because the Eagles were awful all night on offense. Carson Wentz had 33 yards of passing or something like that through the first half, and they somehow come back and cover. A brutal beat for Seattle back.
I thought, Will, it was one of the most amazing gambling moments I've ever seen in my entire life, depending on what side you were on. Because if you're on the right side of that, it had to feel better than anything's ever felt. And I guarantee if you're on the wrong side of that and you saw them line up for 2, because you know Seattle was not going to do anything to stop the 2. They didn't need to. It didn't matter. What the hell are they doing going for 2? Because of the analytics. Now, you mentioned, Will Brinson, my guest, you mentioned Carson Wentz. Let me jump down to that. Hot Take Nation's all over this. Hot Take Nation's got this sense that, hey, wouldn't it be great if the Colts were to trade for Carson Wentz and reunite him with Frank Reich? You tweeted in response, in part, the Colts will never trade for Carson Wentz because 40-year-old Philip Rivers is better. Lay that out for me.
Yeah, I think I jammed that in between anti-bacon and anti-pepperoni takes. So it was sort of, you know, burying the lead a little bit there. But, the reality is that Carson Wentz, you know, this is a wholesale problem for the Eagles, what's going on, right? It's not just Carson Wentz. The offensive line has tons of injuries. The passing, you know, the weapons of the passing game. I mean, they took J.J. Arcega-Whiteside over D.K. Metcalf, and they took Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson. If you flip that, you know, there'll be one less excuse, I think, this year. Doug Peterson's been terrible at calling plays this year. But the reality is Carson Wentz has lost his confidence. He's lost his ball placement. He's lost his accuracy. He's, you know, keeping his eyes down when he's trying to scan the field. He's not patient in the pocket. He's trying to make too much happen. He's just, you know, it's like a golfer when everything's gone wrong and you got the Y word is creeping into your swing and you know it and you're thinking it when you're over the ball. That's where Carson Wentz is right now. And he's in his own head. He's deep in his own head. They drafted another quarterback in the second round last year, and it's just the whole thing is just a mess. Meanwhile, Philip Rivers, I'm not saying he's a top 5 quarterback right now, and he's had some stinkers and laid some eggs out there this year and thrown some picks. That's what he does. But he's playing a lot better than Carson Wentz. And I would right now, if you were trying to handicap it, I would say that Rivers, what he's able to do, a mastery of Frank Reich's system, the ability to raise the people around him and how it calls them to perform better, rather than lowering their performance like Wentz, I'm taking Rivers all day this year and next year.
Will Brinson is helping me elevate the conversation. All right, so you mentioned Doug Peterson. Let me ask you this then. When we're talking about future head coaches, the thinking, Will, was that Eric Bieniemy was an absolute lock to be a head coach this offseason. But when you see the problems that Doug Peterson's having, that Matt Nagy's having, is it possible the teams start to wonder if Andy Reid is more responsible for the success in Kansas City than even previously thought, and could that hurt Bieniemy?
Yeah, you are. That is exactly what I think teams are thinking right now, Jim. There's at least, you know, you hear buzz and speculation that, I mean, you know, when these two guys are struggling to not just succeed, and I mean, Doug Peterson has a Super Bowl, and Matt Nagy, you know, won the division and got to the playoffs and was close last year, and the Bears were, you know, 5-1 to start this season. But I think the biggest concern is that ultimately, you know, when you feel like as an owner or a GM, when you go out and when you buy something as a consumer, you have a certain expectation level. And as a GM and as an owner of an NFL team, when you go out and you hire an NFL head coach, you know, when you hire an Andy Reid protege, your expectation is that guy's going to develop a quarterback. Well, you know, I mean, Carson Wentz had a great season in 2017 until he got hurt. Other than that, he's been mostly mediocre. Nick Foles had a hot streak that won him a Super Bowl. Mitchell Trubisky has been a disaster. They brought in Nick Foles to fix Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, you have to wonder about, I mean, sure, it's, you know, Howie Roseman and Ryan Pace shoulder some of the blame in those particular situations. But, you know, Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy are supposed to craft offensive systems that make quarterbacks flourish, even if those quarterbacks don't have the same skill set as a Patrick Mahomes. And we haven't seen that from a Carson Wentz or a Mitchell Trubisky. And so, yeah, I would be wondering, can Eric Bieniemy come in and develop a quarterback? Because you don't know that. It might just be Andy Reid's secret sauce.
We are talking to Will Brinson. All right, Will, one last thought. You mentioned our mutual friend and colleague, Pete Prisco. I bring this up because Taysom Hill is like a really polarizing topic, you know, in terms of what he can do, how they should use him. The Saints are coming off a win in that weird game against the Broncos. They've got the Falcons, the suddenly red-hot Falcons on Sunday. Pete has called Taysom Hill the right-handed Tebow. How fair is that assessment in your mind?
That's a little bit unfair. If you know where Tim Tebow resides on the spectrum of quarterbacks and just, you know, general human respect for Pete Prisco, then that's an unfair and cruel thing to say to Taysom Hill. I think Taysom Hill is better than that. I mean, you know, he's a better passer. He's probably a better runner, to be honest, just because he's not, you know, he's not a lumbering fullback type like Tebow was. And I mean, I think Pete is bothered by the concept of these, you know, rush first quarterbacks who can't develop and learn in the pocket. And so he takes it as, he's disgusted by the idea of Sean Payton wasting his playbook on a Taysom Hill, especially when he's got a Jameis Winston type who can come in and throw 40 picks, sitting there on the bench. So I think it's probably a somewhat unfair observation, but I do find the Sean Payton obsession with Taysom Hill to be the weirdest thing. It's like, you know, the guy's almost, I think he's like almost like 45 at this point, because he took the Mormon missionary trip. He's been bouncing around forever, you know, and he finally, you know, develops under Sean Payton. I don't love the idea of Taysom Hill. I think the Falcons are going to win this week outright. Raheem Morris, by the way, a coaching candidate people need to look at. And I think maybe this could be sort of the Taysom Hill experiment is not exactly what the Saints need to win a Super Bowl. Might want to get healthy Drew Brees. I think we could see that sort of developing over the weekend.
I like Taysom. I really do. I like him more. Yeah. You like him more than Pete Prisco likes him. I like him more than you like him. But at the same time, I think you make some really good points. Listen, Will, before I send you back to the court, one last thought. You referenced it, so I want you to finish this thought. You talked about burying the lead when I said that Hot Take Nation was all about Carson Wentz going to Indy. Buried within a take, quote, steak is overrated, ketchup is awful, bacon has been overexposed, pepperoni sucks. What kind of responses are you getting to those takes, and which one have you had to defend the most vehemently?
Well, the bacon one, because the next morning I woke up and my wife said, "Do you want a breakfast sandwich?" I said, "Yeah, that'd be great." She was like, "What do you want?" I was like, "Bacon, egg, and cheese." And she was like, "No, sorry, bacon's overexposed, pal. You can have some eggs on English muffin." And she's a big fan of meat, so she loves like a good steak. I think that might be part of the problem too, is that she loves pepperoni on pizza. I'm tired of it. Like, it's overrated. I prefer a great like cut of tuna or some like high end salmon. Like a really good cut of fish, as opposed to a steak. Now, an excellent elite steak, that's fine. But, I mean, steak is just being tossed out there left and right, and people are acting like this chewy, you know, strip that's been cooked to big cooked medium is something we should enjoy. I mean, if you give me some high-end beef, I'm all about it. But I just think the red meat cabal has taken over America to an extended degree, and I'm looking for something a little fresher, a little more enjoyable, like a great kind of fish is what I'm looking for. Some oysters, some shrimp, some scallops. Give me something fresh and less cliche than a steak, Jim.
Okay, that's fair. And a nice can of White Claw with your nice fish, right?
That's right. Yeah. Nothing goes better with a great cut of tuna, ahi tuna, than a black cherry White Claw.
He is a senior writer for CBS Sports. He is a very good friend of the program. He is the host of the Pick 6 podcast. And remember, check out the Pick 6 podcast YouTube channel. He is Will Brinson. Will, great hit, as always. Appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
Always fun, Jim. Talk to you later. Have a great weekend.
You too, dude. He's a great guy, Will Brinson. One of my favorite guys. Genuinely good, good dude. And really good at what he does. When we come back, hey, do what you want with any of it. Man, I can't even believe that we've only done half a show. I feel like I've done 5 shows already. Honestly. I've always said that there's some days when the 3 hours feel like 30 minutes. And there's some days when the 3 hours feel like 9 hours. I just feel like I've done 7 hours of really good content in 90 minutes. I'm not sure why that is. Here is your sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Amazing story. Undefeated Errol "The Truth" Spence Jr. is going to risk it all. Puts his title on the line against Philadelphia's own Danny Swift Garcia. Big fight. It goes down Saturday, December 5th. So tomorrow, live on pay-per-view. Buy it right now on foxsports.com/PPV. Watch it on any screen you want. All right, so really quickly, Adam, we had an amazing first hour that I think people missed. If they want to go back and find it, what is the best way for them to do so?
Thank you for asking. We have a daily Jungle podcast. It's free, where you can get everything. So, you know, this audience comes and goes, and they might have missed that incredible first hour, but we upload all of our best stuff every single day to a podcast called The Daily Jungle, which is everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, Apple, Google Play, your website. So if anyone doesn't know about that already and you don't catch all 3 hours, we put up the best of the best every single day for free on the Daily Jungle podcast. And today would be a wonderful day to listen if you weren't here for the first hour.
Great advice. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing. That's Adam Hawk. He is knowledgeable for all things social. Good job. So is the Big Head. He's coming up next hour. All right, so really quickly, I'm not looking to start any kind of cable news segment or a Facebook debate like your belligerent uncle might, but quite a few people, especially small business owners, are having trouble accepting the new COVID restrictions worldwide. There's a growing sentiment that how is it that places like Target and Walmart are allowed to remain open at large capacities, especially on days like Black Friday? And again, I'm not judging. I'm not even taking a side on this particular issue, but it's a conversation. It's a dialogue. And especially from small business owners, they want to know, how is it that you're shutting us down, but gigantic international conglomerates can jam people into these spaces? Yet, if you have a small business, like a restaurant or a bar, and you are partially or fully shut down and can't survive, how is that okay? How does that work? Again, don't shoot the messenger. I'm just saying that there are certain people that are having issues making sense of shoulder-to-shoulder shopping at big box stores when socially distanced dining is forbidden for small businesses. Again, I'm not even giving you my take per se. I'm not editorializing. I'm just reporting and talking about the conversation. As an example, one of these people, you know, normally it's like, who are these people? I'll give you one of these people. Here are these people. James Aspel. He owns a tequila bar in the UK. He told the Nottinghamshire Live that he's, quote, angry over the hypocrisy of strict lockdowns on bars and restaurants, especially during the holidays, end quote. So my man Jimmy is getting creative and spiritual. Earlier this week, he officially filed paperwork for his tequila bar to become a church.
Tequila.
That's right. 400 rabbits of tequila and mezcal cocktail bar in the UK is now looking to become a congregation called the Church of 400 Rabbits. And my man James said, quote, "With places of worship allowed to open in all tiers, I thought, F it. Let's start a religion. It can't be that hard. Congregation daily till late," end quote. My man, saying F it in the same sentence that you're championing the start of a religion and opening a church is incredible and probably a first and probably a sin in most religions, but not in Pastor Aspel's church. Now, again, I don't talk religion on this show. I don't talk politics on this show, but I'll talk about this. You can sign me right the hell up for the Church of Tequila, for the religion of tequila. Hey, man, what church do you attend? The Church of Tequila? What's your faith? Tequila. What's your religion? Tequila. What's your nationality? Tequila. I mean, that is my drink now. That is my go-to now. That is my Friday, Saturday go-to. That is now my ritual. I admit it. And I hope that I do not offend many when I say this, but it's now my house of worship, my spirituality. Imagine that bar church or church bar or whatever you want to call it. Tequila as the holy water. Confessing your sins to a bartender. Karaoke serving as the gospel choir. A shot of mezcal and some pretzels for communion. The tip line on your tab being the new form of tithing. I'm in. And since I'm only a weekend drinker, the religious analogy continues to work perfectly for me. Like, COVID restrictions have been really hard on a lot of people, but they've also brought out some incredible creativity, you know, like running a marathon on your balcony, turning stadium parking lots into drive-in movie theaters, creating a church and a religion around tequila. Hey, man, we live in a country that promises freedom of religion and worship. It doesn't say what you have to worship. So if James Aspel wants to bow before the agave plant to save his business, I guess more power to him. You know, if that sort of thing is allowed in the UK. We'll see. And look, nobody, especially me, is trying to make light of religion. But people are struggling to keep their businesses open, their rents paid, their livelihoods afloat. You can't knock the hustle. And if Pastor James can turn water into tequila, I might be on the next safe flight over the pond for Sunday service. And as a side note, tequila is having itself a year. Even in this, the strangest year ever, tequila is having itself a year. Tequila is like podcasts now. Everybody's got one. Everybody. The Rock. Jorge Masvidal, Mike Jordan, even Elon Musk just dropped the Tesla tequila. Hopefully not literally dropped it, because that guy can't build anything that doesn't break. Just ask his bulletproof SUV. There wasn't even rockproof.
Oh my God. Well, maybe that was a little too hard.
Yeah. Should we try
the Sure.
Maybe it was poorly constructed, dude. If anybody knows how to harvest agave, extract it, ferment it, distill it, age it, and bottle it, and needs a name on it, hit me up. I want in. I want into the tequila space. Seriously, I want in. I walked away from gin years ago. I did. True story. I have moved into tequila. And I drink it the way I drink everything. Straight. Chilled. I do chill it. Right or wrong. It's my evolution. From gin to vodka to tequila and only on Friday and Saturday. Chilled. Straight up. I want to be in that space. Let's see here. Eric Sig tweets, keep preaching, Padre, Jim. Haunted Horse, James, making fun of my tequila religion is a reason to go. Daniel, quote, thou shalt not swallow the worm, signed the Church of Tequila. I love how this guy just F-bombed it too. F it, I'll start a religion. F it, I'll start my own church. Oh, I can't keep my bar open, but you're not closing churches? All right, that bar is now a church. When we come back, Xavier Howard of the Dolphins joins me, and then right after that, to the big head. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Hour 3 coming up.